Welcome back to part two of this Barbra Streisand carousel. I'm Sean.
And I'm Brian.
Brian, we were completely taken with the way we were, weren't we?
We were. You know, it's funny, Sean, when you just said the carousel, I think of two things. I think of Rodgers and Hammerstein, but I also think of Tomorrowland at Disney World, the carousel of progress.
Oh, yeah?
Do you know what that is?
Yeah, it's showing how the world is getting better, not worse.
Yeah, exactly. So it's this kind of utopian thing. Listener Scott Hoffer is a big fan of the carousel of progress. Why do I bring this up? Because Barbra Streisand's career, as exemplified by the films that we've chosen, is not a carousel of progress, right? You would think, having had a towering performance in The Way We Were, then, you know, becoming a director in her own right and doing Yentl in 1983, you would think that by the time we got around to this film, which we've just seen, that she would be a master of her craft.
Yeah, this is more of a Francis Bacon triptych, don't you think? When I think of carousels, by the way, I think of Theme from Valley of the Dolls, but that's just me.
Well, you know, Valley of the Dolls is also a scenery-chewing performance of addled women. And this movie, you know, it has some of the elements that you might think are going to make a star turn for an actress. And yet. So, Sean, in this movie, Barbara's character is trying to prove a fundamental existential truth.
Yes, Brian. She's trying to prove to all of you that I am not nuts.
That is right. That is the question at issue here. Is Barbra Streisand nuts?
Now, that's more of a rhetorical question, don't you think?
Well, yes and no, as Annette Bening would say. So the character that Barbara's playing is called Claudia Draper. It's clear that some of her behavior, Claudia Draper, would seem to exemplify that she is psychologically disturbed, leading some people in the hegemonic legal and psychological professions to say that she is indeed nuts.
You know, our services are just so underfunded, Brian.
Well, I don't know. Richard Dreyfuss, you know, how would you feel if he was your legal aid attorney?
I would really draw out this court case if he was.
Did you have a yen for 1980s Richard Dreyfuss?
In a word, no, I did not. I didn't have a yen for anybody in this picture.
And certainly not a yen till. But anyway, so the question is she or is she not nuts? But from a filmmaking perspective, I think the question is she or is she not a believable prostitute?
Yes, and is this film or is it not terrible is the other question we have to ask.
Okay, so for years we have wanted to watch Nuts, haven't we?
Well, my first indication of this film was when you told me it existed, which I said, that never happened.
You said, you've got to be nuts.
And then, when Barbra Streisand received the Cecil B. DeMille Award, Shirley MacLaine was narrating this whole long history of why Barbara's filmography is so deserving of it. And there was this clip from Nuts, you know, with the voiceover and the footage, with Shirley MacLaine saying, and once again, delivering a searing performance as a woman fighting her way through the justice system to prove, once and for all, that she was not nuts. And then cue Barbara just in a courtroom going, like flailing her arms and hair, you know, walking around in a bathrobe. We're going to get into this film, but I want to say that when it was over, I turned to Brian and said, that film was crap. And by crap, I mean, it wasn't even shit, it was just crap.
It's funny because it reminds me of another one-word title film. You actually mentioned this earlier. When a certain kind of an actress wants to take on a certain kind of role, and the entire existence of the movie is just to, like, degrade her to the degree that she might get an Oscar nomination. In contemporary parlance, that movie is called
Cake.
Yes, for those of you unaware, Jennifer Aniston tried to de-glam and be depressed, and she at least got even like a SAG nomination, didn't she?
She got a SAG nomination and she got a Golden Globe nomination. But that was the year where you knew that she'd either got it or not got it, depending on the first name being read out. And I remember watching it and Marion Cotillard's name came out and I was like, That's it. Sorry, Aniston, it's over.
Yeah, once that cake had been in the oven for 2 days, one night, it had crumbled.
Yeah, someone left that cake out in the rain.
So Cake would be the example of, like, a movie that solely exists for an Oscar campaign to center around. So this movie, then, was clearly a 1987 attempt to do the same thing. But Barbara just couldn't slip in there because it was such a jam-packed year for actresses, 1987.
I believe she might have been pipped to the post by Sally Kirkland.
Yes, her dear friend Pony Dunbar.
Yes.
Yeah, there is no sign, ladies and gentlemen, of Sally Kirkland anywhere in Nuts. She was too busy taking the title role and her own Oscar nomination in Anna. No more Woman at the Clinic. But there are plenty of Sally Kirkland type roles in this movie, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
Like
early,
you know,
Sally.
Female inmate.
Yeah.
Other female inmate. Crazy female inmate. Yes. Basically, this movie is like, if you can imagine, I'm surprised Barbara hasn't tried to get involved in Orange is the New Black. That would seem like something that she could direct an episode or two of. What do you think about that? Or maybe she could do a extended guest cameo reprising her role from Nuts. Because the opening shots of Nuts do have a, like, Orange is the New Black before Orange is the New Black kind of vibe, don't they?
Yeah, very interesting. It's kind of funny because I think all the women in the prison look like they should be there. And then Barbara Streisand is walking around with them. And it's kind of like, don't get me wrong, I can suspend disbelief quite easily. I can. But it's kind of like, shit, don't tell anybody, but that's Barbara Streisand walking behind us, you know?
With, like, crimped hair, and, like, yes, she is dressed in, like, a hospital gown or a bathrobe half the time and, like, wandering around with ratty slippers, but it still looks like Barbara Streisand with her John Peters hairdo, or maybe it wasn't John Peters at this point, but her Vidal Sassoon hairdo or whatever it is, and that same lighting effect, like, what is it that it's always the lighting effect that, like, hits Barbara more than anyone else?
Well, this lighting effect was where it would hit her just across the eyes, Morticia Adams style. You know what I mean? You know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about, and I know that, like, obviously, certain leading ladies of the 40s had it, like, written into their contract to have, like, certain lighting cues or soft focus or whatever it was, so it's wrong to, you know, ascribe this vanity only to Barbara, but when it pulls you out of the movie, like, it's clear that the movie is attempting some form of gritty realism, and yet all of these star signifiers of, let's watch Barbara play a crazy woman, let's watch Barbara be sexual.
Just to buy the idea that Barbara Streisand is a sex worker to begin with. Like, really? Because these flashbacks of her walking into, you know, very fancy members' clubs in very high-class regalia, you know?
Yeah, like 80s sequined Dallas Dynasty-style, you know, garments.
I just want to go back to what she said about realism, though. It's hard to have any realism in a film that looks so fake. Like, everything about this film looks fake.
Yeah.
By the time we get to see her in the courtroom, she is by far the most aggressive of all the women who are lined up at night court or whatever it is. And maybe that's because looks can be deceiving. I mean, if Barbara can be a call girl, maybe she can throw a punch or two, which she does.
She does, like, within the first 10 minutes of the film.
I didn't give you permission to do that. I'm not incompetent.
Of course you're not, dear.
I'm innocent.
I know you are. That's not the issue.
What do you mean it's not the issue?
The doctors agree, and your mother and father agree it's best if you're in the hospital rather than in the prison.
I don't give a shit what they say.
Your mother and father love you. It's all been arranged.
You goddamn son of a bitch!
Stop her!
Well, she also, the psychiatrist, Eli Wallach, who first interviews her, describes her behavior as flagrantly sexual.
Now, what does that mean, Brian?
I don't know. I mean, flagrantly sexual might involve something like, oh, I don't know, opening your legs and flashing your lawyer with your vagina through your open bathrobe.
Oh, no,
she does at one point.
That flashes her doctor.
And her lawyer.
Oh, she does flash
her
lawyer.
She does.
So in this film, dear listeners, because you're never going to watch it, but we can encourage you that this is a film that has not one, but two moments where Barbara Streisand flashes someone.
Well, I guess what I'm saying, though, Sean, is, like, she's clearly giving us all the, like, signifiers of a manic type of person, a person who's unpredictable, a person who says things like cock and blowjob and flashing him. And, you know what I mean? Like, Barbara is clearly trying to be coarse here. Are you just saying that you don't buy it?
Well, I mean, I don't, but I guess it's really a testament to how bad the film is. I mean, this, the whole film is based around the premise that someone who swears a lot and is rude and shouts is crazy, okay? And I don't think that even in a film to show the limitations of the justice system, or to show how a woman can be abused in the justice system or whatever, what happens to a woman of certain social classes, she falls, lower. I mean, you could really tangentially say it's about all those things, but it's not. It's about a rude woman who has a temper, who won't shut the fuck up.
Okay.
And to base a whole film around a person's insanity, if they're the only things you have to go on, just does not make for very entertaining viewing.
Well, okay, you're being slightly... the execution and the conception are two different things, because obviously we're meant to think, why is this crazy woman this crazy? And there are a few big reveals, right?
I'm not just talking about her bush.
To kind of quote-unquote explain why she has become a call girl. Because let's be honest, while the other women who are in this jail cell are sort of, they sort of look like working class girls who are doing it to earn a buck, Barbara, her character, is from a very high-class family.
Well, Brian, at this point, we should really explain what the film is about. Otherwise, we'd be accused of just being like her lawyer, who manages to go the whole film, it seems, without having to sit down to talk about what actually happened.
Right.
So, as we said before, Barbara plays Claudia Draper. Now, Claudia Draper is in prison. She's there on manslaughter charges. In an act of self-defense, she killed Leslie Nielsen.
The guy from The Naked Gun?
Yes, but get this, Leslie Nielsen is playing a character. I have seen way too much of Leslie Nielsen in his underwear, okay? In his 1980s wife runs.
In the beginning, you thought he was kind of sexy.
Well, I thought he was a body double to start, It was just a really close up of his chest. Basically, he was a John who got a little bit too handsy, became rude, and ultimately started throwing his weight around. Barbara, in a moment of fear and self-defense and doing whatever any woman in this circumstance would do, she basically slices him to death
with a shard of glass.
With pieces of mirror.
Now, we should not laugh about this. He's her John. She takes him back to her pad, mm-hmm. which is the place where she conducts her business as mm-hmm. an escort. We see a bit of their dinner and their banter beforehand where he says things like, "Are there any questions you ask me before we get down to it?" And she says, "I just like to fly by the seat of my pants, and I think I'm going to be slipping out of my chair." What passes for a sexy banter in this movie?
Listen, if I'm being accused of underplaying the ferociousness of this crime, it's only because everything in this film is just off.
In the context of the movie, we are meant to believe, yes, they've had their paid-for sex, mm-hmm. and then she's like, okay, time's up, time to leave, and he wants more. He wants to stay around in the house. Crucially and triggeringly, he wants to have a bubble bath.
Oh, yes.
Which, of course, we don't totally know why this is so triggering to poor Claudia, but we'll learn. So he's running the bath, he's saying, "I like to bathe my girls," and she says...
"I don't like to be bathed, mister." I can't remember what she says. What did she say?
"I'm not a girl."
That's it, yes.
Basically, if you don't know what Barbara says at any point in this movie, it's just probably repeating something that someone else is saying, like, "Don't tell me I'm nuts. I'm not a girl. What? Who said you had to be nice to get a fair trial?" Like, basically, she delivers every line with that same intonation through the whole movie.
You do the kind of the... How would you describe that, Barbara?
Actually, to be honest, when I was talking like this, it's slightly Snagglepuss.
Yeah, it is a bit.
It's a bit Snagglepuss. What about mine?
It's
Barbara.
Like, "I'm going to prove to you, prove to all of you, that I am not nuts." Like, What's my Barbara? And I
yours is like Borscht Belt.
You can't see this at home, but I always, whenever I do a Barbara Streisand impression, I always stick my pinkies out, because if you're doing a Barbara impression, you have to
flip,
do that thing with your hair. When your really long fingernail in your pinky kind of like separates your hair. Anyway, yeah, so mine's more Borscht Belt and yours more Snagglepuss.
Well, so anyway, that's basically how she delivers most of the key lines in this movie. But to focus on the central incident, which is in dispute, like, so he's running the bath, she's trying to get him out, and he does become violent. I mean, like,
No doubt about it.
The implication is that he's going to assault her, rape her. Sadly, for the movie's gravity, I mean, this scene does not play particularly chillingly or threateningly. I mean, it's not just because Leslie Nielsen has become so associated with slapstick comedy, right?
Yeah, this was his last dramatic role before he only did comedy after that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's just these ridiculous things. She's trying to fight him off and she, like, throws a powder puff at him and then he's, like, covered in, like, white powder and...
Yeah, and all the while Ravi Shankar is playing over it.
Yeah, oh my god. Well, also, we haven't described the, like, decoration of her call girl pad.
It's plush, it's fancy, it's full of...
it's full of, like, chinoiserie. Like, there's, like, Japanese erotic drawings, and, like, it's very high-end.
You know, we should have paid attention to the credits, because they might have all been from Miss Streisand's own collection.
But it is literally Ravi Shankar music that's playing, which is, again, giving this weird air of exoticism.
After being
hit with the powder puff, Leslie, who's in these tight-fitting black... you know,
briefs,
exactly right. He sort of throws something like a waste basket or something at the mirror, which smashes, and then he's like,
gerbil cage.
Sorry, her client wasn't Richard Gere. Anyway, so...
Allegedly, Brian.
So then he lunges for her, she grabs a convenience shard of glass, and she... gets him. Now, you, I'm sure, would have preferred a more graphic depiction of what happens to him. I don't know if you picked up on this, because you were zoning out, probably. At one point, they say that she decapitated him.
I did not hear that. Yeah,
definitely. Someone, one of the lawyers or the judge or someone, at one point mentions that she decapitated him.
Brian, that's hyperbole. Okay?
I mean, it may be hyperbole, listen, but
if
it's
a judge says
screenplay.
That, if a judge says you decapitated this man... I think she might not be on trial as to whether she can stand trial. I think she would just be being done for murder via mutilation.
Well, but it's not murder that she's on trial for, it's manslaughter.
Yeah. Which makes, because manslaughter is because she claims it was self-defense, so it's not murder. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, I mean, the legal proceedings in this movie are a freaking mess, and I speak as the son of a lawyer. I'm no expert, but like... even, like, your average episode of, like, Perry Mason or Ironsides or, like, Matlock.
Anything more up to date?
Matlock?
Perry Mason.
Or, like, what's that other one?
Murder, She Wrote.
No, SVU? What is that called?
Law and Order.
Law and Order. I mean, those things have far more connection to the real world of the law than this film.
Perry Mason. Dragnet.
Okay, so that is the incident. We don't get the incident. It kind of is revealed to us in slowly accruing flashbacks. As we said, Claudia does not want the lawyer who's first assigned to her and is being paid for by her very wealthy parents. Well, actually, not biological parents. It's her biological mother and her stepfather. Who are they played by?
Played by Academy Award winner Maureen Stapleton and Academy Award winner Carl Malden.
That's right. Also, Academy President Carl Malden.
Yeah. Yeah. At this point, Barbara's like, excuse me, sorry, I want to say something here. I want to say something!
Yeah, basically, most of the courtroom scenes involve the judge, the bailiff, the lawyers trying to, you know, get on with their business, and then Barbara's on the side in the defendant's table just being like, don't I have the right to speak? And you just have to think, like, this is probably what Barbara was like to poor Martin Rick, the director, through the entire shoot.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait one goddamn minute.
Mrs. Draper.
Capacity?
Why me? Why not him? Did they examine him for his capacity? Did they examine her? I know a judge who jerks up under his robe. Nobody gave him a test.
Claudia, you are no longer on the stand.
Well, then put me back on the goddamn stand until I convince you. Don't whip me with your rules. While you're playing with your goddamn rules, the meter is running out on my life.
Can I just say, like, how do you feel about the casting of Maureen Stapleton and Carl Malden in these parts?
I've never seen a more thankless female role in my life. Like this is Barbara all over. It's like, yeah, I don't really want the other woman to speak. So we'll have her in the courtroom and she won't speak.
Now, she does have a few emotional monologues when she's on the stand where she talks about how her beloved daughter used to be so sweet and then she, like, fell down the slippery slope to being a call girl.
I know, but it didn't have to be Maureen Stapleton, Brian. Could have been anybody else.
Well, no, I know, but Sean, honestly, I think I said this to you when we were watching it. You've got Eli Wallach, Carl Malden, and Maureen Stapleton.
And Richard Dreyfuss, yeah.
No, but those three, uh-huh. Right? They've all been the original leads in, like, Tennessee Williams premieres from, like, the 50s and 60s, yeah? We're basically talking, Barbara, like, called up the actor's studio and was like, give me a best talent. I want a whole complete set of them. Send them all down to the set.
Yeah, so they can act in a film with three screenwriters.
Well, and here's maybe part of where we can, like, zero in on part of the problems with this movie, because one of those screenwriters is the man who wrote the play on which this film is based.
The and great...
I don't know what his name is.
Exactly, Brian. I was setting you up for that. Okay? This is one of those instances, like, when the film was over, I was like to Brian, is that play produced regularly?
I mean, I suspect there's a certain kind of regional or amateur theater somewhere in America that will put on a play like Nuts, because picture it, Sean. Okay? Yeah. Picture it. Poughkeepsie.
Mm-hmm.
You run a small regional theater company. Mm. There's one woman in your regional theater company who always plays the lead roles, and maybe, like, she funds the theater company, yeah? You got a few other interchangeable people who like to play lawyers and mothers, and you're like, Nuts! Here's a play. It's probably one set. I imagine that the play itself is set almost entirely in the courtroom, right? Like,
or they put a table and a chair and they turn the lights down to symbolize that they've gone to a different location.
You know, but, like, there's some good monologues. You've got, you know, the various witnesses each get their own moment on the stand.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, you can see for a certain kind of, like, dramatic entertainment, this kind of thing, in theory, is kind of gold.
A bit like that musical Parade. You know, this and Parade probably get put on way more often than we think.
Well, do you know, when I was in middle school, I acted in a play like this. Have I ever told you this? A play called The Night of January 16th. It's basically a murder mystery. There's a parade of witnesses. I was the defense attorney, and then the audience votes. It was like alternate endings.
Oh!
But do you know who the author of this play was?
Do I know who this person is?
You do.
Tell me.
Conservative ideologue Ayn Rand.
Are you serious?
Conservative ideologue Ayn Rand wrote a basically murder mystery that I performed in middle school.
And how did your father feel about you being in this?
I'm not sure that he knew who Ayn Rand was, but he definitely was troubled that I was playing the defense attorney.
Yeah, but when you really should be prosecuting them.
Anyway, back to Nuts. If you did not know that this movie was based on a play, how quickly would you be able to tell?
Well, Brian, considering there's only three walls in every scene, I would say, no, they haven't really tried very hard at all.
And those walls are very flimsy. Like, where are the locations in the film version? There's, like,
well, they're all
a cell.
Internal, we should say.
There's, like, a cell. There's, like, an examination room where the psychiatrists look at her.
There's the TV room.
There's the courtroom. There's various hallways.
Her apartment.
Yes. What is always funny to me is, like, there's windows, so they're up on the upper floor of some New York building, and there's, like, a window that is, like, meant to indicate that there's, like, a wide world outside, including pigeons. Like, the pigeon budget on this movie must have been enormous. I wonder if they got an expert pigeon wrangler, because they've clearly just put the pigeons, like, on a, like, ledge for a window that doesn't exist, and these, like, fake-looking twin towers and things in the background.
So basically, they have someone behind the curtain just throwing birds every time they open up the window.
But it's honestly, it looks like essentially they just went onto the stage of a stage production of this play and just plopped a camera in front.
Yeah.
Also, those windows serve another crucial function, which is, if it weren't for those windows, the Barbra Streisand lighting cue of the sun-deviled light, like, wouldn't be entirely naturalistic.
I would have liked if this was all under, like, office lights, you know, strip lighting. That would have been
the harsh,
been
like,
real.
Lars von Trier, Schaubrunner version of it. You know, definitely there should be, a German postmodern, like Ivo van Hove or someone should do like the reprise of Nuts.
I think, Brian, you can probably detect that I didn't enjoy this film very much.
I know you didn't, so...
But let me go into just explaining why, okay? Yeah, I should really state my case before this episode is finished. It's pointless. It's a pointless film, okay? It is a vanity piece of the worst kind. It is cake with nuts on top of it, okay? Like, who on earth went to see that film and came out thinking, oh, that was good? And the worst thing is, Barbra Streisand has talent and money. If this is the kind of stuff that she's choosing to do when she's already a huge star, like, what is she passing on?
Yeah, I mean, who knows where her career was at this point. Her relationship with John Peters, who'd been producing with her, had broken down after Yentl. I don't really know. Obviously, she had been a director. She started to choose her projects relatively infrequently. Mm-hmm. So there must have been something... I mean, like... Let's put ourselves in Barbara's headspace for a moment. I know, a scary place to go to. But, like, if you get this material sent to you, like, what do you think the appeal is for her?
Someone probably said, Barbara, listen, sweetheart, you haven't been in a movie in a while. You haven't really done anything. This film here is a piece of crap. You can act its socks off. We'll get you an Oscar nomination. Everyone will remember who you are. Bada bing.
Was that the same people who appear in the first track on the Broadway album who are saying, like, nobody's gonna buy this, it's like your old stuff?
Well, but maybe this was the thing, maybe genuinely this was it, where it's like, you know, Barbara, it might be a weak year for actresses, get yourself an Oscar nomination, it'll be great, you know? So she got halfway there, she got a Golden Globe nomination.
But I also think, I agree with you, and that's the cynical take on it, but I think also there's the, like, quote-unquote, acting challenge, of Barbara playing a slut.
Yeah.
I use that word, obviously, in quotation marks, but she is definitely painted as a loose woman who has a filthy mouth and mouths off, and so to see Barbra Streisand doing this is jarring, and if it worked... I suppose it could be thrilling and exciting to her fans to see the range that she has. I mean, there's no song here, right? There's not even like a closing credits song that's like, I'm nuts for you, so nuts for you. No, there's none of that.
She does do the music, though. The music is by Barbra Streisand.
Yes, that's true. So she pulled a whole Clint Eastwood of, like, composing some tinkly tune.
Can we just point out what is probably the most ludicrous part of this whole film?
Yeah.
Her going rates.
Okay, yes. And this is what I'm saying, like, there is a monologue, which Sean is about to expound to us, that is clearly the climactic high point of the movie, which they've been talking around in the courtroom, the fact that she is a call girl, but no one's ever really openly admitted it. And then she basically gets this monologue where she tells everyone her cri de coeur, her, you know, raison d'etre. Yeah.
She says things like, if you want straight sex, that's $300. If you want to wear my panties, that's an extra 100. If you want to bring them home and eat them, that's another 100. And if you want, and for $500, I'll give you a blowjob. And I was thinking to myself, $500.
I get $400 for a straight lay, $300 for a hand job, and $500 for head. If you want to wear my panties, that's another 100. You take them home, Mr. McMillan. That's another 100. No whips, no ropes, no spikes. I've got liquor and grass. Anything else, you bring your own. It works like this. You call me up. We make a date. I look you over. And if I like you, we make a deal. And darling, I am worth the trouble. Take my word for it. If you want the best.
$500 for a blowjob now in 2018 is $1,200.
You know what her Yelp reviews said, though, on, like, escorts.com?
Come on, what?
They said, That mouth is like butter.
Oh!
Okay, so you gotta suffer through cringe-worthy moments like that. Can I also... We talked about Richard Dreyfuss and his legal strategy. So basically, Richard Dreyfuss...
Oh yeah, let's get to the end of this.
Yeah. So he is assigned as the legal aid attorney once she's punched out the other attorney. And you would think that, like, physically assaulting her attorney might be, I don't know, just enough evidence to show that she's nuts, but it's not. They still gotta hold this whole hearing. So Richard Dreyfuss seems to be fascinated by her. He's kind of roped in. As we know, the legal aid profession is overstretched, and there aren't that many people, you know, defending indigent clients. So in he comes. You kind of think maybe this is going to go the direction of them being attracted to each other, but that never really pans out. Like, when she first is talking to him, she says things like, "You got a missus?" And he's like, "Yeah, I do." And she's like, "She give good head?" And you're like, "Oh, God.
It's what we'll have to probe with for the entire film.
This is more of her flagrantly sexual, inappropriate behavior. There's never a scene where... I mean, like, okay, Sean, you're not a trained lawyer, yeah? Let's say you need to defend someone who's accused of murder. Or manslaughter. You're in a sealed room in a courthouse. You get to interview them. What's the first kind of thing you ask about?
I'd say, listen, I don't want to know if you've done it or not. Let's get our version of events straight. Starting in the beginning, what happened on the night in question?
Yeah, this never happens in
the
movie.
Really good, by the way.
Yeah, that was very good. Yeah. Well done. Mariska Hargitay couldn't have done it better. So that never happens in the movie, and I think that's probably because they want to keep the audience in some kind of suspense so that they can keep, like, filling in the story. But it basically means that Richard Dreyfuss has no legal strategy, and his, like, Socratic questioning of the various witnesses is just so poor. So Barbara's giving him, like, hints and clues, yeah? So whenever certain subjects, like bathtubs, come up, she starts getting twitchy.
Bathtubs, so much bathtubs. And he's like, I see something.
Or like banging, she's like taps a glass of water with a pen in a very annoying way, like frequently whenever like subjects of like fathers are mentioned, things like that. Or like her husband and anything to do with sex, even though she's a call girl. And these are obviously signposts that are, you know, meant for us to pay attention, and if we didn't pick up on it...
She's just banging the glass.
Yeah, the judge says things like, "Young lady, can you please stop banging the glass?" And you're like, "Young lady, Barbara Streisand in 1987. I mean, honestly.
My favorite part of the whole film is where Richard Dreyfuss turns to her and says, "Will you shut the fuck up?"
So finally, they get Carl Malden on the stand, and Carl Malden is her stepfather. Now, I think Richard Dreyfuss by this point already has a suspicion that she doesn't like Carl Malden. Why? Oh, perhaps because in the mad lunatic drawings that Barbara has been sketching on her legal pad, she's drawn a picture of Carl Malden with fangs coming out of his mouth. I mean, that is the degree to which, you know, they're really telegraphing to us where this is going. Did you see the quote-unquote big reveal coming here, Sean?
No, I really hoped that Carl Malden would have been just a nice person.
A nice person who would sell us American Express traveler's checks and host Oscar's Greatest Moments.
Well, I was so sure that it was going to be Maureen Stapleton.
Who was the villain?
Well, yeah, because we see a flashback of a small girl crying on a bed, and Maureen Stapleton, as she is then, slightly darker hair, drinking from a brandy glass. Oh my God.
They've clearly got a troubled family life, but that troubled family life has begun when Barbara's natural father walked out on them. Carl came in as the stepdad. And basically, Richard Dreyfuss doesn't even know that he's going to get this testimony out of him, but like on the fly, he basically improvises and discovers, you know, essentially that Carl Malden abused young teenage Barbara Streisand.
Yeah, that he would do awful things to her and then he would bathe her all the way until she was 16 years of age.
Did it go on a year and stop when she was six?
What are you suggesting,
or did it go on
Mr.
for 2 years and stop when she was seven? I remind you, you're under oath.
Well, I don't know. It didn't last long. Claudia liked me to do it.
Liked you to do what?
To bathe her.
To bathe her?
Which is why the bath is so triggering for her. And yet again, especially in the climate that we're in now, it's not something that you want to joke about.
No.
Like, but I think the reason why this movie is frankly so laughable is because of the way that it depicts this as like cause and effect in the most
simplistic terms.
Simplistic, banal terms. It's like she was abused in the bath. When she sees a bath, she reacts. She has this feeling about this. This thing causes that. I mean, even to the degree that, do you remember what Carl Malden, his strategy for like winning her charms?
Oh, he put like $10 under her door.
Yeah, so basically, whenever she does something like she does her chores, or presumably she satisfies him or doesn't talk to her mother about what he's done, he slips money under her door. So if that's what you associate with sex, then what do you become, Sean, in the future?
Yeah.
You become a high-class call girl who's proud of the fact that she gets paid $500 for a blowjob. So, like, this movie is an incoherent mess of, like, crazy Freudian psychology.
It's kind of like someone read the back of a psychology book and once heard what prostitutes do and then based an entire play on it. Like, it's, I mean, can we recommend this in any possible way for anybody?
No, and it's not even like a juicy courtroom drama. I think you'd get the flavor of it if you just, like, watch the key YouTube videos. I mean, honestly, like, Barbara's $500 for a blowjob monologue, like, I really hope there are some brave women who are auditioning for Juilliard with that speech, because, like, somebody needs to, like, give that speech and actually sell it, you know? Because Barbara, frankly, does not make it convincing. It's laughable. Yeah. So watch that on YouTube. I wish there was a clip where you would get Richard Dreyfuss confronting Carl Malden. Do you remember? He screams at him. He screams, "Did you make your stepdaughter your lover? Did you make your stepdaughter your lover?" And I was just thinking, like, that is the weirdest way to phrase that question. Yeah. Don't you agree? Yeah.
Even like, just hearing it now just gives me the creeps.
It's insane. And the other weird thing is that after that revelation comes out, you think, okay, well, the court case is going to be over now, because based on the logic of this film, she's not nuts. She's just been abused. But then it carries on for about 10 or 15, 20 more minutes, and Carl Malden's disappeared. Maureen Stapleton cries. They go through the whole hearing, and then they get her off. She's not nuts. But she's still got to stand trial. This is what I find so perplexing.
And so, probably the most insulting part of this whole film is the coda that comes at the end. So, as Brian pointed out, the next thing I'm going to talk about was probably a directorial choice, which was the only scene set outside in the real world. So Barbara leaves her cardboard sets behind and comes out into the street where she walks amongst the people. And as Brian was like, has nobody posted bail on this woman?
Well, no, but honestly, what's just odd is, like, she's in a hearing to show if she is psychologically fit to stand trial for manslaughter. Now, again, I'm no lawyer, but this is all that's happened is that she has been shown to be psychologically fit to stand trial.
Like, she still needs
to stand trial. Yeah. But literally, they're like, okay, so you're psychologically fit to be accused of manslaughter. And then she just walks out of the room, like, by herself.
And you know that the film is ending. And I was, like, turning to Brian thinking, is this part one or something? Is there a sequel to this?
Is there, like, an entire Netflix series about the joys of Claudia Draper? But she's, like, she's wandering around in her bathrobe, and like, clearly there's a social point that's being made because there's other people on the street who are behaving unconventionally and seem like they, too, might be crazy. And maybe we're both, you know, we're supposed to think, oh, isn't everybody a little bit crazy? Doesn't everybody have a little bit of trauma?
Isn't everybody just a little bit nuts?
Yeah, and then they have the audacity to put some title cards up on the screen.
Yeah, saying Claudia Draper stood trial for manslaughter and was acquitted of all charges. X, Y, and Z is now, you know, head, what was it?
It's like just head psychologist of the New York State Prison Authority.
And I was like, is this real?
Is this
and then we sat through the whole credits waiting for the end of it. Nothing about this is real, okay?
It's
nothing.
All fictitious.
And listen, I'm fine with that. Just don't give me that stupid coda.
But that's the thing. Like, those title cards are basically just dramatic laziness. It's like, someone probably said, you know, people are going to wonder, like, did she get acquitted? And they're like, okay, we'll throw up a title card that'll explain what happened. And then we'll just also say some things about these other people as if they were real people, which they obviously aren't.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think Nuts is a classic example of a movie Barbara didn't direct, where she is clearly the center of attention. The whole thing exists to be a vehicle for her. And, you know, Martin Ritt is not a slouch.
Yeah, like, he did Norma Rae.
Norma Rae, he has a very acclaimed career. I think this was toward the end of it. And, you know,
I think he died moments after filming.
Some cardboard flat just like
sliced him open.
Some pigeons, escaped pigeons, pecked out his eyes. But, oh, sorry, Martin. R.I.P. Martin. But, you know, this just goes to show when Barbara is given material and given full rein to go full crazy, she just can't rein herself in. Actually, do you know what I'm having a memory of? This is all the way back to the beginning of this series. Do you remember the early bad movie that we talked about that Barbara Streisand developed for a while before Michelle Pfeiffer took it over? White Oleander.
Oh, God.
So Barbara clearly didn't learn her lesson. She wanted to appear yet again in prison jumpsuits and cells. She wanted to be the Michelle Pfeiffer role in...
She would have been too old for
White
that.
Oleander. Yeah. Barbara must have a thing about being locked up.
I want to be real. I want to show people I'm authentic.
Yeah, what about her support for the prison bill that the Clintons passed, okay? Barbara, if you really care about, you know, the criminal justice system, maybe stop making these bad movies and actually start reforming, you know, neoliberal democratic policies.
Well, I say Senator Sanders voted for that crime bill.
Which he did.
Which he did, yeah.
Okay, we're not relitigating that.
No, we are not.
Happy days.
That's my Hillary impression.
Here again. Well, we did not have happy days watching Nuts, but we hope you enjoyed hearing us talk about it.
Yeah, if you want to watch it, I advise you to get really drunk beforehand.
Stoned?
Drunk.
Okay, good.
It's not a stoned film, I'm sorry. It's just a drunk film.
The next and final in our Barbra Streisand series, however, might be a film that you could enjoy stoned.
Yeah, maybe Quaaludes.
I'm going to go so far as to say, Sean, that while this next and last film is probably bad, definitely crazy, it is also perhaps the quintessential Barbra Streisand star vehicle.
Yes.
And I am very glad to have finally seen it, and I hope our listeners will be glad to hear us talk about it.
Yeah.
It's going to be the next episode, Barbra Streisand Crazy. We'll be teasing it at Broad Appeal Pod on Twitter, or you can just stay tuned and listen to the next episode.
Bye.
You think giving blowjobs for $500 is nuts, huh? Well, I know women who marry men they despise so they can drive a Mercedes and spend summers in the Hamptons. I know women who crawl through shit for a fur coat. I know women who peddle their daughters to hang on to their husbands. So don't judge my blowjobs. They're sane. I knew what I was doing every goddamn minute.